Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks again this week for joining me on another episode. I want to say a couple things before we get started, before we go into the briefing room. That is a thanks to the people who make this show possible, and that is law enforcement specialists and Stinky Vest. Stinky Vest helps to make this show possible, as well as Blue Light LLC, who has amazing investigative software for law enforcement. So I got a lot to talk about and just a short time in which to do it. So let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
This week has seen the deaths of more law enforcement officers in both violence and in accidents. This has not been a good year for the American law enforcement officer. We're up to 26 law enforcement officers already killed in the line of duty. We're only not even halfway through the month of March. Now, there's a couple things I want to talk about here, and one is that one of the deaths of these officers occurred in Louisiana, and this is a reserve officer named Lawton, and this is in Zachary, Louisiana. He was murdered when he was run down by a felony suspect as he and a full-time police officer were walking up on a vehicle which the suspect was in. And the suspect saw him, crushed him against a rail in a parking lot of a grocery store, and killed him. Now, one of the things that is so tragic about this death is that he was an unpaid reserve officer. Officer Lawton was also a full-time firefighter. His service to his community is something that he relished. And he gave his life in the line of duty. But he was not being paid at the time. And reserve officers play an integral role in law enforcement all over this country. They take the same risks as any full-time law enforcement officer, but they do it out of a sense of community. And these men and women deserve our thanks. And this tragedy is one of those things that just crushes my heart. And there was another murder of a police officer. And, you know, you'll hear these at the end of watch when I do this at the end of the show. But there was another police officer killed named Gregory Casillas. And this happened in Pomona, California. And his partner and he had been in a pursuit with a suspect. The guy had bailed out and run into an apartment. And as they approached the apartment door, the suspect opened fire through the door. The officer never even had a chance. And it hit one of the officers. Now, here's where I wanted to bring this up. And that is that the officer who got hit was a field training officer. And he was Officer Casillas's FTO, or field training officer. Officer Casillas had gotten out of the academy just 6 months prior. And when an officer gets out of the academy, they have to go through field training. It's very intensive. This was Officer Casillas's last night in field training. He was going to graduate from field training that day. And he tried to pull his partner to safety. When he did so, the subject opened fire again through the door and struck him in the head and killed him. You know, he's young man, just started his career, and it just shows the terrible dangers that it is facing all law enforcement officers. So then when I see some of the madness that is going on in our country regarding politicians, politics, the way people are treating law enforcement officers, it just inflames me. Now, there's a coffee house called Hasta Muerte or something. It's in Oakland, and it's fairly new, right? So one of the Oakland police sergeants, who is a member of the Latino Police Officers Association. He's a Hispanic officer, goes in to say hello to this new business and to get a cup of coffee. And you know what they did? They told him he wasn't welcome there, that they don't serve police officers because it's their safe space, and they want their staff and their patrons not to be intimidated and be in fear of the big, bad, armed police officers. And so they aren't allowed in there. Doesn't that make you just sick? Now, he's a Hispanic police officer, and he made it known that he was discriminated against, as he was. And, you know, if he had gone in there without his uniform on and they didn't serve him, well, he would have had a major case against these people. But because he was wearing a uniform, you don't think you're going to find a lawyer that will even take the case. The ACLU has been strangely silent. This is going on in various places of the country, but especially when it happens in Oakland, it makes me sick. There is where the mayor came out and warned, publicly warned, illegal aliens to get out of town because ICE was coming into town. And ICE, of course, are law enforcement officers, and she endangered them by giving the criminal illegal aliens this warning. So we have this convoluted, weird community where the mayor comes out publicly to save criminals, and we have a commercial establishment that doesn't serve the police. What is going on here? Is the world lost its collective mind with people like this? And then let's take a little jaunt over to Jackson. Jackson, Mississippi, that is, where the mayor, I can't even really pronounce his name. Let me try it. Ready? Okay. It's Jackson Mayor Chakwa Antar Lamaba. Yeah, I'm sure that was his given name. Suggested that the police go the extra mile by not providing the mugshots of people who have been involved in officer-involved shootings. Right, you heard me right. So a guy can get involved in an officer-involved shooting, kill a police officer, shoot a police officer, and this idiot wants to protect their their dignity by not giving their mugshot to the media. Can you imagine what's going on in this idiot's mind? Whose dignity is he wanting to preserve? And this is a guy who are the people of Jackson stupid for electing a guy who has in his past, he is a proud radical is what he calls himself. A proud radical, and he calls these mugshots the visual dehumanization that occurs when mugshots are used. I mean, it is just absurd. This is the elected official of Jackson, Mississippi. You know, I hate to tell him this, but as soon as the media sues him, which they will, and then he's going to spend hundreds of thousands or maybe even millions of dollars fighting this, because guess what? It's freedom of the press. This is a public record. Mugshots are a public record. And this guy refuses to give him, only an officer-involved shootings, because, you know, those are only cops that are getting shot. So, you know, we don't want to dehumanize these poor people who are shooting the police. I look at this guy's face on this news release, and I just want to go slap the hell out of him. Ridiculous. What an idiot. Well, okay. Let me chill out for just a little bit here. Now let's talk about a court decision. I sometimes just shake my head at some of the court decisions coming out of California, but now this one's coming down to Washington. This one's going to affect police officers and communities all over the country. So here's the deal. A judge ruled that a homeless man who had lived in his truck for 5 months on a city street could not have his truck towed away. Yeah. So in other words, this guy's been living in his truck, which it doesn't work. It's just parked on a city street. He's been living in it because community complaints. The cops went and told him to leave. He refused to leave. They told him to get his car out of there. He wouldn't get his car out of there, so they towed it, and he sued. I wonder whose idea it was to sue. I bet it wasn't his. And you know what? A judge ruled in his favor. That means that homeless can literally live in any car that they feel like, on any street that they want to, and the police are basically helpless to do anything about it. Ooh, that's going to be great for a community. Think of having some homeless guy in front of your house, and where he's using your front stoop for a toilet, which is happening all over Los Angeles, all over San Francisco, all over Oakland, and now apparently also in Washington and near Seattle. So here we have another boneheaded decision by a judge. And now that's going to affect communities and law enforcement all over the country. Talk about boneheaded decisions. Now, here we have had in the news and in flaming communities all over America, the situation with school security, with the Parkland shooting, which has catapulted the safety of school children to the top of everyone's list. There is a meeting that takes place in the state of New York, and it was in Ramapo, New York. So the chief of the Ramapo police and his command staff hear about this school-based policing. This is being given by the New York State Education Department to have a direct conversation about children, education, and safety with the New York State education leadership and legislators. Okay, so the chief of police pays his $50 to go and attend this and participate. He gets there in uniform, and he is told by the moderator, who is a school teacher, that they have to disarm before they can attend the meeting. She said that it was an educational event and that armed uniform officers would make people uncomfortable. Can you say snowflake? So this snowflake tells the cops to take their guns off, and then even if they take their guns off, they're not allowed to talk. What the hell is happening? They want to know about school security. They want to know what can be done, and they don't allow the police to come into a meeting with their weapons on, which is part of their uniform, and then they're not allowed to participate because, after all, they're only the police. What do they know about the safety of their communities? The absurdity here is beyond belief, but I guess I shouldn't, considering it's New York State, And they have that gigantic moron named Cuomo, who's the governor. I guess I really shouldn't be surprised at anything. And yet, I am. And that, my friends, is this week's View from the Blue. Anything that I can do to make law enforcement lives better, safer, and more effective, you can count me in. And I got to tell you about an incredible investigative tool that I have discovered. For those detectives involved in any criminal activity, investigations, and crime analysts too, this is amazing. And it's got a couple different uses. I mean, you can use it for conspiracies. You can use it for murder investigations, drug investigations, trafficking in humans. It was originally created for IED investigations. That's improvised explosive devices in Afghanistan and Iraq. And the owner, the president of this company, which is Blue Light LLC, that's Blue Light LLC, is a retired Green Beret Sergeant Major. And they use this stuff very effectively. It is now available to police agencies, big and small. And I got to tell you, I've seen it in use. It is amazing. It's Blue Light LLC, okay? And any criminal investigation where you want to gather the evidence and show the connections to people, this is the product. I've seen it. It's amazing. And these people do incredible work with it. They train you up in it. And it's for big agencies, small agencies. It's being used all over the country. It's in conjunction with IBM. This is amazing, amazing software. So check it out, Blue Light LLC, and that's bluelightllc.com. Check it out, and this will solve crimes and save lives.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutloud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is an 11-year veteran of law enforcement. He is also the president of the Police Officers Association of the Clark County School District. That is here in Las Vegas. His name is Matt Caldwell. He's a law enforcement officer and the head of the police union. And in the wake of the police shooting, the school shooting, rather, in Parkland, Florida, he is the perfect guest. Thanks so much for coming on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, Matt.
Thank you for having me, sir. I really appreciate it.
You know, this is such a topic that is reaching into the hearts of Americans all over the country. Now, you are the union president of the Police Officers Union of a very large school district, the Clark County School District. And I know that there's a lot going on involving issues in your police agency. And let's talk about some of them.
Yeah, just yesterday, we recovered three handguns from three separate incidents. In one of those incidents, an officer responded solo to the school because nobody else was available or nearby to a report of a person carrying a concealed weapon on an elementary school campus. That officer made contact with the person and placed them into custody, detained them temporarily, and was able to resolve the situation. And those are things that we face on a daily basis. We're extremely short-staffed, but we're really lucky to have very dedicated, quality officers working for us.
Were these three incidents in one day with armed suspects, were these possible school shooters?
I don't believe they were. They were three separate incidents, unrelated, at three different locations. It's really a matter of what we really have working out for us that works really great. And a couple of those instances, we had really very vigilant staff and officers there that reacted quickly and appropriately to not give anybody a chance to make a poor decision.
All right. Well, let's go back so that the listeners can get a little feel for what school district police officers actually do. Now, you work for the Clark County School District Police Department.
That is correct. The way our department structure is we have the Board of Trustees would be almost like our governor or city council. The superintendent would be appointed by them. And the Board of Trustees and the superintendent supervises the chief of police. So we're our own independent police agency with about 160 commissioned officers.
Okay, you got 160 commissioned officers. How many schools does that cover?
There are about 358 school sites, and when you break down that 160 officer number, you're really looking at probably about 130 officers in the field after you look at command staff, other administrative officers, things that are necessary to run a police department.
All right. Now, I'm not really good in math, Matt, but you're telling me that there's over 300 schools and there's only 130 cops. That doesn't make much sense to me.
That is exactly what I'm telling you, and that's exactly why I want to speak with you. You know, we're really missing out on a lot of funding. We'd really like to see 40 additional officers just to begin with, and we're talking about a relatively small amount of money for that, in the neighborhood of $5 million to hire 40 additional police officers. And that would be a great starting point for us to put us in a position where we can do a lot more proactive policing.
But that doesn't even give you enough officers for one officer per school.
It doesn't. And, you know, that's why I would say we hire 40, we do so responsibly, and we assess and we add as we can. It's very difficult to find qualified police candidates right now. And the way our department is structured, we hire lateral officers only, which means they have to pay for their own academy or come from an outside agency that we accept their post for. So we really have a pretty small pool of candidates.
You mean to tell me that your department doesn't, like all other agencies, hire people and put them through an academy?
I think the last time that happened, and I don't know the exact date, I know they put me through an academy, and that was 11 years ago. And after that, maybe it's been about 9 years. And the reason is budget cuts. If you look at our department, since 2008, we've lost 17 officer positions. This year, we received a $1.6 million cut to our budget. And if you look at what they're doing in Florida right now, the governor of Florida said, hey, I want to devote $500 million to school safety. And we're the fifth largest school district in the United States. We're actually larger than Broward County School District. But if you combine Miami-Dade and Broward County, they would be double our size. So if we had $250 million, we'd have an amazing police department. And we're not even saying that that's not a reasonable request at this time, I don't think.
Well, it would seem to me that with all of the attention being drawn to the schools and the violence in the schools and being so concerned about school shootings, that this would be a priority of this community, not like an afterthought.
You know, I would really think so too. It's definitely my priority, and every officer that works on my department feels the same way. Your child's safety is their priority. And any visitor, any staff member, we want to make sure they're safe. They have the right to feel safe, and we're going to protect their right to safety at all costs.
Well, let me ask you this. I know you have a chief of police.
Yes.
But when you're in the schools, are there patrols in the schools, or are you just reactive and respond to calls?
So there's a structure there. We do have officers that are on campuses. Then we do have patrol officers. We have a detective bureau, of which I'm a detective. There's six of us. And really, when you look, you have six detectives to cover over 300,000 students and 50,000 employees. And I'm sure that you've seen the news, how many staff members we arrest for acts they commit against children, and just the number of crimes we investigate. We're really, really overworked. Nobody here is complaining. They're just saying, give us some help is all.
Well, when it comes down to crimes occurring on the campuses, I mean, everything takes place on a school campus, everything from sexual assaults to minor disturbances. How do you guys handle that?
I can tell you we receive approximately 80,000 calls for service on a yearly basis, and we handle the calls at a priority the same way any other agency would. You know, what is the most serious crime? We're going to deal with that first, of course, and then work our way down the list. And, you know, I think that we really have excellent customer service within our department. We're very responsive. We would love to be more proactive. Right now, we're pretty reactive, though, I would have to say.
So, let's go back to patrols in the schools, okay? Are there certain schools that are chosen for some criteria or at random where you actually have a full-time officer, or does that not take place?
There are most, I think every comprehensive high school has an officer assigned to that school. So what that means is it wouldn't mean a specialty school, like say like Votech wouldn't have an officer assigned perhaps, but they would have an officer that worked in that area close or nearby and may have additional responsibilities. So unfortunately, that's the state of affairs that we're in. We would love to have at least two officers on every campus, every high school campus that is, just so they have the best chance to protect the children there and prevent crime.
Now, what's being done to target harden the high schools and the elementaries and the other schools? Is there anything that, I mean, do you guys have much input into that?
I can say that nobody's asked me for my input. You'd have to ask, you know, command staff direct on that. But my understanding is that not a lot of input's coming in from us. And you have an issue there. You have this school campus, and I'm sure you've been to the schools in Las Vegas. They're wide open. There's many doors on the outside that anybody could walk through. There's doors all over the place. You can't chain the door for fire code. You don't have the personnel to staff each door. They don't have the funds to build a gate around the school. It's just it was a design flaw, I think, from inception. So now you're in a situation where you're going to spend a lot of money to really target harden these schools that you just referenced. And the question is, where does that money come from? And I can tell you, as a citizen, I'd be glad to pay my part of it. I'm sure most people would too.
Well, it sounds to me like we're just a Parkland waiting to happen. That's what it sounds like to me.
Know,
I mean, it sounds like we're.
I don't want to say that. You know, I just think that really what needs to happen is there needs to be immediate action. There needs to be immediate action from the school district, from other local agencies to step up and say, we want to help. And then actually help, not just say they want to help, but provide resources, come up with a plan, work with us. I've given several media statements where I've asked for, we need funds, we need support, and I'm getting no response.
Are you, now, you're the head of the union. How do you,
yes,
how do you work with management? Are they responsive to the needs of the working cops?
They absolutely see the need to. They understand we need more officers. And, you know, whatever discussions they're having, I'm not privy to all of those. I know that they understand that, and they seem to be very clear on that, too. It's a hard battle. The problem with the school police in general is we're not funded separately. We're funded out of their general budget, so we're not considered public safety. And whereas like Las Vegas Metro has money earmarked for public safety that can't be touched absent some legislative action, the school district receives all their money in a general fund balance that they can disseminate how they see fit. And like I said earlier, they cut $1.6 million from us this year. So if that tells you where we are in their priority list, I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah, I'd have to say that is pretty clear. Well,
yeah.
Are all of your officers, have you guys all been well trained in active shooter?
Absolutely. We train. We call it active assailant, and for the reason that the person could have a knife, they could have a baseball bat, they could have a gun. It could be anybody that's there to do harm at the school. And we do have a yearly training, and we actually just had another specialized training last night with instructors that are going over new tactics that I won't discuss for operational safety issues, of course.
Sure.
But I can tell you that they're really thinking ahead. Our instructors that we have here are top-notch. They work with Metros. I want to say it's MACTAC. Is it MACTAC? It's called, yeah, I believe it's
yes.
Called MACTAC. You know, they work with them directly. They come up with plans together. Our guys are very, very, very well-trained, and they're ready to go. They're not going to back down. They need better equipment to help preserve themselves, but they're going to go in. That's what they're trained to do, and that's what they're going to do.
When you saw what happened in Florida, what were your thoughts?
I really just – I felt terrible for all the people there. I can't, you know, begin to imagine just the terror of the children. And just, and having, you know, been, we've had a few active assailant calls here in the school district that I've been a part of, one of which was at Clark High School. I want to say that was last year, where we believe somebody had run into the school with a gun. And we put the whole school in a lockdown. We searched room to room. And the person wasn't actively shooting then. But that was still a very real threat situation, where we had thousands of kids in that school that we weren't sure if they were in danger or not, or if somebody in that classroom had a gun and could harm them. So I can only imagine the difficulty in dealing with that call that took place. I've seen things, I haven't seen that actually happen, but I've seen things similar to that take place. And it's really, really hard to deal with.
Well, you know, given what has been surfacing in reference to the school resource officer who failed to enter, and then now it's coming to light that several other deputies didn't enter, and it is also coming to light that a commander told officers not to enter. I mean, what are your thoughts when you hear this?
I can tell you that I respect my command staff here, but if they told me something like that, my ears would be shut off and I'd be going inside. And that's just exactly how I personally feel. And I want to believe that the majority of men and women on my department feel the exact same way. We're trained to preserve life, and I can't imagine somebody on my command staff giving that order, absent something that, I mean, is just unforeseeable by me.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I think as more and more information comes to light on this, it's really, it's going to be an issue that law enforcement officers all over this country are going to have to come to terms with. I mean, you know, as a cop, you have to live with yourself. And I remember, an incident where I was ordered by, I was a sergeant at the time, and I was ordered by a lieutenant not to go into a burning building where there were people that were screaming for help, and I could get them out. And I remember just, hey, listen, you know, this is one of those things you got to live with yourself. So it really does come down to that personal commitment and you know, your willingness to, you know, face the consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want to write me up for saving somebody's life, I'll take that write up. You want to put me on suspension, I'll take that all day long. I'm not going to stand by and let somebody else get hurt. I simply cannot do that.
You know, there's a topic that has concerned me. And there's some information that's been coming out of Parkland that the school resource officers were kind of handcuffed by the school system, in that they basically decriminalized everything. And they didn't want things to be entered into the database as crimes, so that basically they were taking incidents that were happening with students and pacifying them, giving them other types of discipline as opposed to using the criminal justice system. What's the policy of the Clark County School District? I mean, if there's a fight in a school and somebody gets hurt, do they allow you guys to investigate and to make arrests?
Yeah, it's not them allowing us. That's our job, and we're going to investigate anything that we perceive to be a crime. You know, if we don't know what happened, that would be different. But if something happened that we have knowledge of and we believe it's criminal action, we're going to investigate that. If they interfere with us, they would suffer consequences. That's not going to take place. They have an employee management wing that looks over them. There's also NRSs that say if you obstruct a criminal investigation, you're subject to arrest. They're simply not going to do that. We have a great working relationship, I would say, with every school I've been to, where they report things to us correctly and typically promptly, and they assist us with our investigations when necessary. They do not try to hide things that I'm aware of.
That's heartening to hear. You're saying that your officers have a very good relationship, a working relationship, with the teachers and the staff in these schools?
You absolutely have to. I mean, school security and safety is really everybody's job that's there. if there's only one officer on that campus and there's 3,000 kids and there's, I don't know, let's make up a number, 25 entry doors, that officer can't be everywhere. They need the help from every adult in that school and every kid in that school to make sure everybody stays safe. It's really a community effort.
Well, what are your thoughts on, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about how to make the school safer. And one of the thoughts out there, actually put out there by the president, is to arm certain teachers and train them and give them CCW permits. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that that's not feasible, you know, and you understand this. You're a law enforcement officer for a long time. If you think about how much training you have every year on when it's proper to deploy your firearm, when it's proper to shoot someone, how to retain your firearm, just basic firearm safety, to try and condense that course and give that to a staff member and have them make the decision on when it's okay to shoot somebody or not, or present their firearm or not, is something I don't think that they're ready for. So that's really, really, at this point, not a good idea. You already have a school-based police department. The proper answer would be to fund them adequately, hire enough officers that they can handle these situations, and not ask a school teacher to make that decision based off of minimal training. All of our officers go to an academy that's, I believe, 22 weeks in length. We all have recurrent training. We're all trained up to Post 1 standards. We all go to the range at least 2 to 4 times per year. We train active assailant, defensive tactics. These are things the staff members are not going to have. They're not going to be proficient in.
Well, that's interesting. I personally, I'm a proponent of arming teachers. I think it could be done with a minimum amount of resources. And I think that there are some teachers, I mean, certainly not every teacher, but there are a number of staff members that I think could be adequately trained and trained up and equipped. But the reality is, as you said, that there aren't enough cops to put in the schools. And
there's such a true statement.
And so I find it very disturbing that the school district cut money from your department instead of giving more resources. I can only hope that with all of the focus being put onto our schools now, that there is an outcry from the public saying, hey, what are you guys doing?
I really hope to see that too. I mean, the writing's on the wall. It's time to be preventative. It's, you know, they can say we're doing a great job. Nothing like that's happened here. I think the last shooting inside of the school, I want to say, was about 20 years ago. I don't know the exact date. I think it was in the 90s. We have had shootings outside of schools. That has taken place. And just like I said before, we can't be everywhere. And I think that, really, I understand your position on arming teachers. I get that if they're there, they can stop a threat. But what about the in-between time? You know, how are they going to react if a fight takes place and they're carrying a firearm? Do they know how to, when they're supposed to do these things? And that's where the difficulty and confusion can come in. And then when you look at an officer responding and they don't know who this person is that has a gun to an active shooter call, and that creates a whole other problem there too. As you know, you see a person with a handgun and a shooting just took place and they're not wearing a police uniform. What are you going to think they're doing there?
Yeah, no, there's a lot to be discussed here. Certainly the plight that the Clark County School District police have is simply that you're underfunded and undermanned. And I understand that there's going to be a sheriff's race here coming up, and you have some thoughts about that.
I do. You know, I looked at that. I looked at the requirements to run for sheriff, and you know, at this point, I'm ready to run for sheriff. And what I want to see is, you know, I hear Sheriff Lombardo, he did say yesterday that the school police department's a quality department, that they do excellent work, and that he wants to help. But I can tell you right now, I don't know what he's doing to help us. He could direct patrol resources there, and I'm not trying to beat him up, but what's being done? I can tell you from my position as union president, I can come and ask for money. I can say we need this, we need that, but I have no way of doing that. If I were sheriff, I could direct resources in a responsible manner to schools as it's needed. If you look at the way the school district is structured, There's roughly 325,000 students across roughly 350 campuses, which is about 20% of our population in schools at any given time. So if you look at that, what I would like to see, and anybody could do this, would be directed patrol response to those areas.
What is that? Explain what that means.
Directed patrol?
Yeah, to the listeners here who don't know what that is.
Okay. So what I would have done is, like, say school starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. And we all know school starts at 8 a.m. And I have, let's say, 10 patrol guys in the area, an arbitrary number. I would say to, you know, five or how many your patrol guys could be, absent a call for service, you will be in this area from 8 a.m. to 8:45 a.m. And then, you know, we have, say we have lunch breaks at 11:30 to 12. I would say, absent an exigent circumstance or a call for service, you will be actively patrolling this area and able to communicate directly with the police officers within the school and or the staff members in the event an emergency takes place. Because we all know that time is a huge factor. When an active shooter takes place, 4 minutes, you have a dozen plus dead bodies in there. We don't want that. If the officers are right in that area and they're available, they can come in and help us. We can help each other. We used to have great relationships with community relations, community policing officers that would come to the schools consistently when I was a campus-based officer, and we would work things together. We would talk about neighborhood problems. It's about an outside-to-inside approach. Let's make the outside safe, and that helps to strengthen the inside.
Interesting. So in essence, what you're saying is that you, if you were elected sheriff, you would work much, you would have the Metropolitan Police working much closer with the school district police.
Yeah, absolutely. And I could tell you that we have a great relationship with Las Vegas Metro right now. They have a lot of great officers there that assist us with things, and we assist them with things. But like I said, I'd like to see a more directed patrol approach. If the current Sheriff Lombardo wanted, he could at this time right now say, I want a direct patrol to be there at these times. That's within his scope of ability. And the problem, like I said, as union president, I could say, hey, I want more patrol guys. I need more money. We need more money for officers. And people say, hey, that's a great statement, Matt, but you can't make us do that.
Right. No, you're absolutely right there. So you have to work the resources that you have. So are you actually going to put your hat in the ring for sheriff?
I absolutely am. You know, I'm sorry, reading the paperwork. It's a little bit complicated. I'm not a politician. I've never run for any office before, but I will figure it out. I'm going to make it happen.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with that. And in your capacity as the union president, what's the number one concern of your officers?
I think that right now there are guys, they really want more officers. They want to be able to be more proactive. They want better equipment. You know, we're not issued level 4 body armor. We're not issued patrol rifles. Those are things you have to purchase secondary. And you know, those things can be pretty expensive. And if you want our officers to be successful, give them the tools to be successful. And that's what we really need to do. And unfortunately, we've been overlooked on federal grants, or either that or they haven't been applied for by the department, one of the two situations. There's just not money coming to us that's earmarked for school safety, and that really needs to happen.
Are you saying that your officers do not have rifles?
They are not issued rifles. If you want a rifle, you have to purchase one yourself. And I know that's kind of consistent amongst some agencies. The difference there would be that those agencies typically receive, you know, $1,800, $2,000 a year in uniform allowance. So if they didn't need to buy pants or shirts that year, they could probably take some of that money and buy a patrol rifle with it.
Yeah, but they shouldn't have to use their own money to buy weapons. They should be supplied by the department. And I'm stunned that in given the events that have been taking place since Columbine, that your agency doesn't supply you with those weapons.
I don't really have a good reason as to why they don't, and other than budgetary constraints. They simply do not have the money to do it. And that's, you know, that's where we are. We have a very, very small operating budget. Most of it goes to paying for manpower. There's very little left over to purchase other things.
Right. I hear what you're saying, but I would think that in this day and age that your department would would be providing the basics, and that includes weapons. But all right, we've kind of
I could tell you, you know, I bought mine, and I bought it at a when they were expensive. I paid $1,000 for my AR-15. Now you can get one for $600, but I wanted it, and I needed to have it, and I wanted to be ready to go.
Well, I hear you. I hear you, and I applaud that that you care enough to have done that. So, you know, we've run out of time. We've been talking to Matt Caldwell, who's the Police Officers Association president of the Clark County School District, and I appreciate you taking the time, and best of luck in your run for sheriff.
Thank you so much, sir. I just want to see Nevada, Clark County, be a very, very safe place. We just have to do better with the resources we have, and keep building on that too.
Exactly. Thanks again.
Thank you. Bye.
Anybody that has worn ballistic body armor knows that, first of all, it's uncomfortable. Secondly, it's hot as hell, and depending on the climate, you know, these things can get a little bit rank. Well, you know, I know that as a cop, I was constantly struggling with this, especially in Vegas, where it's so damn hot that you sweat within this thing, and one of the difficult things is keeping it fresh. Well, there is now an amazing product that eliminates the odor from your vest in 4 seconds or less. Yeah, I know, it's fantastic. And it doesn't only work on vests, it works on anything. Diaper pails, so it's not just for cops, it's for household use as well. It's an odor eliminator and doesn't have any harmful chemicals. It was made by a very famous deodorant company, whose name I will not mention, but this thing is amazing. And if they got a great website name, it's stinkyvest.com. Yeah, you heard me right, stinkyvest.com. Go check this out. It's good for, like I said, all odors, pet odors, but it's made specifically for the vest, but it's good for everything all around the house. So check it out at stinkyvest.com. One thing I know from being a police officer for as many years as I've been is that off-duty police officers spend a lot of their time working extra jobs. You know, the police salaries around the country, let's face it, they're not that great. And off-duty officers have to, in many cases, work extra jobs, security jobs, traffic jobs. So there is a company, believe it or not, the owner of this company was actually a guest on my show, Bonnie Lucas, and it's a company called Law Enforcement Specialists Incorporated, and they put off-duty officers to work in more than 40 states throughout this country. It's a phenomenal idea, and these people really know what they're doing. So if you're an active-duty police officer and you're looking for extra jobs, now, they do this in connection with your own police agency, so you're not violating any department rules, regulations. You're actually working in concert. They just find extra jobs for you, and then they work with your agency to get you those extra jobs. So it's a phenomenal idea. They've been doing this for years, and like I said, they're in most states in the union. I didn't even know they existed, but when I spoke to Bonnie, who owns this company, I was very, very impressed. So check them out at www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you'll be able to find out whether you're in a state that they work in. They tout themselves as an exclusive nationwide security solution utilizing active duty law enforcement officers. Having trained, armed, and uniformed police officers present is an extremely effective way of deterring threats. And we all know that's true. So check them out, www.offdutypoliceofficers.com. It's a great way to make extra money, and it's completely within your department guidelines. And check them out.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty.
Unfortunately, I have four names to read this week. The first is Police Officer Christopher Ryan Morton of the Clinton Police Department in Missouri. Police Officer Christopher Morton was shot and killed when he and two other officers responded to an unknown situation as a result of a 911 call at approximately 9:20 p.m. The call taker could hear screaming in the background on the call, but the caller did not otherwise communicate and hung up before officers arrived on the scene. As the officers arrived at the home in the 300 block of West Grand River Street, a male subject opened fire on them with a semi-automatic rifle. The officers returned fire and entered the home in an attempt to take the man into custody. The man continued firing, wounding all three officers. Officer Morton remained in a bedroom for approximately 15 minutes before being rescued by the other responding officers. He was transported to a local hospital, where he succumbed to his wounds. The subject then barricaded himself inside the home for several hours. A SWAT team entered the home shortly after midnight and located the subject deceased. The ensuing investigation revealed that the original 911 call had been made from a home approximately 15 miles away, and the officers were dispatched to the wrong location when the call was traced to a different address. The male subject who opened fire on the officers was out on bail for weapons and methamphetamine charges and was under investigation for a rape. The female at the home was charged with distribution of methamphetamine following Officer Morton's murder. Officer Morton had served as both a reserve officer and a full-time officer with the Clinton Police Department for 3 years. He had recently returned to full-time status following the line-of-duty death of Police Officer Gary Michael on August 6, 2017. He was a veteran of the Army National Guard, survived by his parents and siblings. Police Officer Christopher Ryan Morton, Clinton Police Department, Missouri, End of Watch Tuesday, March 6, 2018. The next is Police Officer Gregory Casillas of the Pomona Police Department in California. Police Officer Greg Casillas was shot and killed as he attempted to arrest a man in the 1400 block of South Palomera Street following a vehicle pursuit. The vehicle fled after officers attempted to stop it for reckless driving. The driver crashed into another vehicle before fleeing on foot and entering an apartment. As Officer Casillas and another officer attempted to make contact with the man, he fired through the apartment door, striking both officers. The officers were both transported to a local hospital, where Officer Casillas succumbed to his wounds. The man surrendered after remaining barricaded inside his home for more than 15 hours. He was charged with Officer Casillas' murder, as well as several counts of attempted murder of a peace officer. Officer Casillas had served with the Pomona Police Department for just 6 months and was still in field training at the time of the incident. He had been employed as a civilian with the agency for 3 years prior to entering the police academy. He survived by his wife and two children. Police Officer Gregory Casillas, Pomona Police Department, California, End of Watch, Friday, March 9th, 2018. The third officer to die in the line of duty this week is David LaShawn Manning. Deputy Sheriff David Manning was killed in a vehicle crash as he pursued a car on Highway 111 halfway between Tarboro and Pine Tops in the town of Edgecombe County, North Carolina. His patrol car collided with a pickup truck traveling in the opposite direction. The vehicle he was pursuing crashed in a roadside ditch a short distance away. The driver fled on foot but was later apprehended. The occupants of the truck, a man and his wife, sustained serious but non-life-threatening injuries. Deputy Manning had served with the Edgecombe County Sheriff's Office for just 4 months, and he survived by his daughter. Deputy Sheriff David LaShawn Manning, Edgecombe County Sheriff's Office, North Carolina, End of Watch, March 11th, 2018. And the fourth officer to die in the line of duty is Reserve Officer Christopher Lawton of the Zachary Police Department in Louisiana. Reserve Officer Chris Lawton was killed after being intentionally struck by a vehicle as he attempted to serve a narcotics-related felony warrant. He and another officer had spotted the wanted subject inside a U-Haul truck parked at the Walmart on Plank Road in Baker, Louisiana. After observing the subject for several minutes, The officers parked their patrol car behind the truck and began to approach on foot. The subject saw them walking alongside the truck and started to drive away, pinning Officer Lawton between the truck and a shopping cart corral. Officer Lawton's partner was able to broadcast a description of the vehicle, which was located approximately 20 minutes later. The driver was arrested and charged with first-degree murder, hit and run, and being a fugitive from justice. A second occupant of the vehicle was charged with obstruction of justice. Officer Lawton served as a part-time, unpaid reserve officer with the Zachary Police Department and also serves as a full-time firefighter with the Zachary Fire Department. Officer Christopher Lawton, Zachary Police Department, Louisiana, end of watch, March 12th, 2018. May all of these officers rest in peace. I want to thank you for listening in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on AmericaOutloud.com. Couple things. One is, if you are on Facebook, you have got to follow me. Come to Facebook and look up Randy Sutton Public Figure. Randy Sutton Public Figure, and like it and follow it, and you'll be able to see everything that I write and communicate with me over there. And if you're on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at LT Randy Sutton. And I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn. I don't even know how to use Instagram, but you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I also want to thank my advertisers. They really, they make this show possible. So if you are looking for some of their products and what they do, please take a look at them. The first is Blue Light LLC. Blue Light is a software company that does just an incredible investigative software. So if you are a law enforcement leader or a detective, check them out. That's Blue Light LLC. And also, law enforcement specialists. Law enforcement specialists, they provide extra work assignments for law enforcement officers in most of the United States. So check them out. Stinky Vest, law enforcement officers, you all know how nasty those vests get. They got a great product. It's a spray, and that is stinkyvest.com. I appreciate you once again for listening in to Blue Lives Radio. I'll see you again next week.